The Nelm Sisters Mystery is one of the most sensational mysteries of the early 20th century that most people have never heard of. In the summer of 1914, Eloise Nelms was in love with an attorney she planned to marry. Her sister Beatrice questioned the attorney's motives and wanted proof that he had her sister's best interest at heart. The sisters took a train from Atlanta, headed to Texas to meet the attorney, but they were never seen alive again. The investigation into the Nelm sisters' disappearance would lead to investigations in Atlanta, New Orleans, San Antonio, Houston, San Francisco, and Portland. Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring history and mysteries of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. This is the mystery of the disappearance of the Nelm sisters. Historic West End, a residential community just 3 miles southwest of downtown Atlanta, was established as Whitehall in 1835. Residents received a charter in 1868 and renamed the community West End, inspired by London's trendy theater district. West End was one of the first streetcar communities in Atlanta and was home to many prominent residents of the early 20th century, including authors Frank L. Stanton and Joel Chandler Harris. It was also the community the Nelms family called home. John Willis Nelms was a Georgia native who lived in Texas and Tennessee before returning to his home state, where he met and married his second wife, Lily Lee, in 1881. They had three children, Eloise, Beatrice, and Marshall. John Nelms served in the Georgia legislature, was once keeper of the state penitentiary, and U.S. Marshal for North Georgia. He also served as West End mayor and sheriff of Fulton County. Nelms made a name for himself in the state and was a wealthy man when he died suddenly in his West End home in March 1911. According to his will, his children received the majority of his inheritance to be evenly distributed between 26-year-old Eloise, 23-year-old Beatrice, and 20-year-old Marshall. Marshall and Beatrice handled the inheritance with a maturity their family had always seen in them, especially Beatrice, who used a portion of the inheritance to launch her real estate company. She was described as energetic and a young woman who was known not only for her beauty, but her exceptional business skills. She built her company into a success and quickly recouped the money she invested to build her own wealth. Eloise did not follow a similar path. She had married young, but she and her husband, Walter Dennis, were on the outs. They had a son, Walter Jr., but following his birth, the relationship between Eloise and her husband went downhill. Eloise wanted a wealthy husband who could give her what her rich friends had, a big house in Atlanta with all the jewelry and fine things she could ask for. But that was not Walter Dennis's lot in life. The marriage broke down, and Mr. Dennis moved to New York around 1911. Along with Eloise's jealousy of her friends who had rich husbands, she seemed ill at ease with her sister's success. When Eloise received her inheritance in early 1912, she chose to leave Atlanta and head to Carson City, Nevada. Eloise met an attorney named Victor Inez. He explained she would have to establish residency to get the divorce she wanted, and that would take 6 months. Eloise was immediately drawn to Victor Inez. He was older, in his mid-40s, and known as a dapper fellow who worked as assistant to the U.S. attorney in Nevada. He had a wife and three children in Portland, Oregon, and most people who knew Victor Inez described him as a man who had a very big ego. Eloise was an attractive younger woman, and Victor's job and swagger was very attractive to her. Before long, the two were in a relationship. When Eloise met Victor, she had about $20,000 from her inheritance, but slowly she was convinced to turn her money over to Victor for safekeeping and wise investments. Victor promised he would leave his wife and children to marry Eloise, and wanted to make sure their future was secure. He told her that once he divorced his wife, they could marry and move to India. Victor asked Eloise to leave Carson City and spend time away from him while he worked on obtaining the divorce. Eloise agreed to Victor's request to not only leave, but destroy all of his love letters so no one could find them and prove their affair. Eloise traveled to the Pacific Coast and then returned to the Nell's home in West End, Atlanta, where she awaited word from Victor about their future. While she waited, Eloise worked as postmistress in the East Point Post Office. On May 1, 1914, Eloise walked into the post office and shocked her coworkers by quitting. She told them she was going to India to see a rich friend. Victor Inez had been in touch. He instructed Eloise to quit her job and then instructed her to meet a stranger at an Atlanta hotel. Victor told Eloise she needed to bring $650 to a woman named Mrs. Hardiman, who would be waiting in a room at Scoville Hotel. Eloise handed over the money to this woman and then headed home to West End. Unbeknownst to Eloise, her younger sister Beatrice had been concerned about her strange behavior and followed her. Beatrice waited for Eloise to leave and then approached Mrs. Hardiman, expressed concern over her sister's meeting, and asked what it was all about. Victor Inez rang the room while Beatrice was there, and Mrs. Hardiman handed the phone to Beatrice. Victor explained he was in Birmingham, Alabama, and Beatrice said he was close enough to come to Atlanta to make things right. She demanded he hand over all the land deeds she knew he claimed to have purchased as an investment using Eloise's inheritance. Victor told Eloise he had used the money to purchase holdings in Mexico and Montana, and Beatrice wanted to see the paperwork. Victor agreed they should meet and asked Beatrice to meet him in Houston in 2 weeks. An irate Beatrice, who loved her sister and didn't want to wait 2 weeks, headed to the train station. She planned to board a train to Birmingham that afternoon. She was ready to confront Victor face to face. But when she arrived at the train station, she was surprised when she ran into Mrs. Hardiman and a man who was introduced to Beatrice as Victor Inez. Beatrice already suspected Victor was up to no good and demanded he stay in Atlanta. He said he had to go and again promised he would meet Beatrice in 2 weeks in Houston, where he would be able to return the deeds to the Nelms. But Victor made Beatrice promise she would not tell Eloise of their encounter. While Beatrice was at the train station, Eloise was at home with her mother, where she revealed the truth. She told her mother she had met an attorney in Nevada, and now that he was divorced, they planned to marry and start a new life in India. Eloise confided to her mother that she wasn't sure if the deeds Victor claimed to purchase existed or had any value. Eloise's mother spoke out against the marriage, but Eloise defended Victor and said that even if he had stolen from her, she was in love with him and she was going to marry him. Beatrice returned to the West End home, where she met with her mother and sister and revealed the encounter with Victor. The women agreed Beatrice and Eloise would travel together to Houston so Beatrice, an experienced realtor, could view those deeds and confirm whether they were real or fake. On June 10, 1914, the Nelm sisters boarded a train from Atlanta to San Antonio. From there, they would travel on to Houston, where they planned to meet Victor. The Nelm sisters were seen at a stop along the route in New Orleans, and they saw a friend when they arrived in San Antonio. Over the next few days, there were phone calls home to their mother in Atlanta, but then those phone calls stopped. Mrs. Nelms received a telegram from Eloise and Beatrice from New Orleans, confirming they were en route home to Atlanta. But the sisters did not return. Weeks later, on July 7th, 1914, Mrs. Nelms received an envelope in the mail, postmarked from San Francisco. She immediately assumed the letter would be from her son Marshall, who had just moved out west, but the handwriting on the outside of the envelope wasn't familiar. When Mrs. Nelms opened it and read the letter inside, she was shocked. It was a typewritten note bearing the signature of her daughter Eloise, and the letter bore disturbing news. Eloise claimed she had killed her sister Beatrice in New Orleans, and she was now in San Francisco so she could kill their brother Marshall, after which she would take her own life. A frantic Mrs. Nelms called police and demanded a telegram be sent to Marshall to warn him that he was in danger. Mrs. Nelms explained to police everything she knew, from Beatrice's encounter with Victor to the trip Eloise and Beatrice made to Texas, and her concerns about their delay in returning home. She explained Victor claimed to be divorced and that Eloise was planning to marry him, but Beatrice questioned Victor's character and had traveled with her sister to look out for her and encourage her to return home if the deeds Victor presented were fake. Police began what would become a complicated search for the Nelms sisters. They published this description of the missing women in papers across the country. Beatrice Nelms is a blonde, 26-year-old. She is a self-reliant businesswoman. She is of medium height and has blue eyes. Eloise Nelms Dennis is a brunette, 30 years old. She is slender and talkative, slightly taller than Beatrice. Mrs. Nelms offered a $400 reward for any information about the whereabouts of her daughters, dead or alive. San Francisco police located Marshall Nelms and confirmed to Mrs. Nelms that her son was safe. When he heard about the letter his mother received, Marshall immediately told police the idea Eloise would kill Beatrice was preposterous. He suggested police find Victor Inez, who could probably help them locate Eloise. Marshall Nelms then made his way home to Atlanta to support his mother while police searched for his sisters in Atlanta, New Orleans, Houston, Fort Worth, and San Antonio. There was confusion as to which city the women were in or if they had ever made it to Houston to meet Victor. Only one thing was certain. The New Orleans chief of police confirmed the coroner had no record of Eloise killing Beatrice in their city. The mystery of the Nelms sisters' disappearance was national news, with people divided over the belief that Eloise killed Beatrice. Once reporters learned of Victor Inez and the strange circumstances surrounding his relationship with Eloise, national opinion began to turn to the belief something sinister happened to both of the sisters, and Victor was behind it. Police tracked Victor Inez and learned he had left Nevada with his wife and children and headed back to Portland, Oregon. They confirmed Victor was still married to his wife, Ida May, and had never filed divorce papers. When police tracked down Victor to question him, he denied any romantic involvement with Eloise. He said he found her unattractive and only served as her divorce attorney. He also claimed he had never been to the city of Atlanta. On July 10th, a reporter with the New York Times confirmed Eloise and Beatrice had been seen by several witnesses in New Orleans on June 13th, the stop the sisters made en route to Texas. The sightings had been confirmed by police. The reporter also confirmed the sisters cashed a check for $1,450 at Commercial National Bank in New Orleans, and both had written checks to Victor Inez totaling nearly $10,000. According to confirmed sightings of the sisters, Eloise and Beatrice were next seen at the Southern Pacific Station in San Antonio on June 20th. Victor Inez's name was listed on a hotel registry in Houston from June 13th through 18th, and again on June 30th, which showed he was in the area as planned to meet the sisters. The trail of the Nelms sisters went cold in Texas. On July 12th, Victor Inez was spotted at home in Portland, Oregon, where a reporter asked him about his relationship with Eloise. He again balked at the idea he was romantically linked to her and mentioned she had spoken of murdering her sister and taking her own life, subjects which had concerned him. He said he had never gone to Atlanta. And that claim sparked outrage from Eloise and Beatrice's mother. Mrs. Nelms made a statement to the Atlanta Press calling Victor Inez a liar who had been in the area just before her daughters left Atlanta. Mrs. Nelms publicly called for Governor John Slayton to help with resources in the search for Eloise and Beatrice. Attorneys for Mrs. Nelms called on the federal government to intercede and arrest Victor Inez. But authorities in Portland said their hands were tied. There was no evidence that would warrant arrest. Victor claimed he was in El Paso, Texas in April, headed to Memphis by way of New Orleans, and then on to Los Angeles, where he arrived on June 1st. He remained in L.A. until July 1st, when he left for Portland, arriving on July 5th. The letter Mrs. Nelms received, allegedly written by her daughter Eloise, had been postmarked from San Francisco on July 3rd. The investigation baffled law enforcement in several cities who were working to solve the mystery of the missing Nelms sisters. Police would be hounded by false reports of sightings from cities across the South. Marshall Nelms decided to take matters into his own hands. He hired private detectives to help with the investigation and chase down leads on his own. Marshall learned Victor Inez had been married at least twice before his current wife and was a man of low character. Victor had been married to Mrs. Caroline Green, then Mrs. Clarence Sickles. A few years after he married Mrs. Sickles, she learned Victor had not divorced his first wife. When confronted, Victor took their 4-year-old son and abandoned his wife. As weeks passed, Marshall Nelms and his mother faced the reality that Eloise and Beatrice were dead. But the Nelms wanted answers and justice. In late July 1914, Marshall met with the Bureau of Investigation in Washington, D.C., which would later become the FBI. He asked the Bureau to put their resources to work to help find his sisters and arrest Victor. But the Bureau only had about 40 agents, limited resources, and denied the request. Marshall Nelms continued to pour resources into his private investigation, and by mid-August 1914, he was able to present enough evidence to San Antonio authorities to issue an arrest warrant for Victor Inez and his wife, Ida May. Marshall Nelms released this statement to the press. Eloise and Beatrice left Atlanta on June 12th for San Antonio. They took dinner in New Orleans with friends, stopped in Houston, and were seen to leave the train in San Antonio, and were later seen in company with two others believed to be Mr. and Mrs. Inez. In the meantime, Inez, I have learned, rented a cottage at 120 Wilkins Avenue in San Antonio, into which he moved. It was discovered that the windows had been nailed down, canvas tacked over them, and two stoves in the home were kept going 4 days, although it was the middle of summer. Marshall also presented records which showed Victor Inez purchased butcher knives, a large meat grinder, red lye, sulfuric acid, and other accessories one would need if they were bent on murder and trying to destroy evidence of the crime. As a lawyer, Victor Inez knew Texas upheld corpus delicti, which required the viewing of a corpse of a murder victim in order to verify death and move forward with a murder indictment. Marshall Nelms fought on. He revealed to San Antonio authorities he tracked down a witness who had seen his sister Beatrice in public with Victor in San Antonio on the day after Eloise and Beatrice arrived. For unknown reasons, plans changed from meeting in Houston to meeting in San Antonio. Victor apparently convinced the women not to stay in a hotel, but stay at his house at 120 Wilkins Avenue. It seems he wanted the women to feel at ease and bided his time until the next day, when he allegedly murdered them. Marshall was convinced, based on the evidence discovered by private investigators, Victor stabbed Eloise and Beatrice, then likely placed them in the bathtub, where he used lye and chemicals to try to destroy their corpses and evidence of the crime. Marshall believed that when this did not do the job, Victor Inez used the large meat grinder he purchased to further break down the corpses and flush them down the drain. If all of this proved true, Victor Inez was a cold-blooded killer who underestimated Marshall Nelms. Marshall was the son of a former sheriff who had learned a lot from his father about identifying and chasing down killers. When Texas authorities searched the Inez San Antonio home, they found toiletries and items confirmed to have belonged to Beatrice and Eloise Nelms inside the home. When the cesspool was drained, authorities discovered fragments of human bones. Portland police arrested Victor and Ida Mae Inez on August 14th. Ida Mae was seen at the house with Victor at the time the murders allegedly occurred, and authorities believed she was Victor's accomplice. But at the time of her arrest, Ida Mae was weakened by tuberculosis and begged that her condition be considered before forcing her to travel from Portland to San Antonio to face the charges against her. Marshall Nelms told family attorneys and investigators in Texas his family would have justice for his sisters. Marshall personally traveled to Portland with a deputy sheriff to escort Victor and Ida Mae Inez from Portland to San Antonio. The deputy sheriff searched the Inez home in Portland and found the large meat grinder, which was transported to San Antonio. Inside the Inez's Oregon home, investigators also found personal belongings of Beatrice and Eloise, including jewelry. A chloroforming outfit and other kinds of poison were taken into evidence. The meat grinder would be key evidence for the state's trial against Victor Inez. Texas authorities believed Inez purchased it in Texas, had it delivered to his house in San Antonio, and then ordered it shipped to his home in Oregon. But members of Inez's family insisted it was purchased in Carson City, years before the Nelms sisters disappeared. Victor Inez contradicted the story when he claimed the meat grinder was simply left behind by the owners of his property in Oregon. Inez never explained why he had a chloroforming outfit in his house, but his defense implied it was connected to cases he had investigated while serving as the assistant U.S. District Attorney at Carson City. That theory was never proven. On August 8, 1914, the New York Times reported the disturbing discovery of vertebrae, believed to be parts of the bodies of Beatrice and Eloise, found buried near a barn at the Inez home in San Antonio. Weeks later, on August 21st, the Atlanta Journal revealed Mrs. Nelms found two unsigned and undated letters in the Atlanta apartment of her daughter Eloise. Mrs. Nelms recognized Eloise's handwriting on one of the letters, but the second appeared to have been written by Victor Inez in a disguised hand. Experts could not confirm that claim because they had no handwriting sample from Inez in Atlanta for comparison. The letter, reportedly written by Victor, was in keeping with the known facts, including his desire to keep his monetary relations with Eloise secret. Mrs. Nelms stated her belief the note was received from Victor by Eloise shortly before she and her sister left for Texas. It read as follows: "Money in cash. This is strictly of yourself. I don't take drafts or checks or anything to have cash at any bank here or any other town, but positively get the money in bills and do what A told you to do. You need not let B know or anyone else about it." Mrs. Nelms believed the initial A referred to the woman known to the Nelms sisters as Inez's aunt, who had used the names Mims and Hardiman, and who was alleged by Mrs. Nelms to be none other than Ida Mae Inez. The second letter was from Eloise to Victor and revealed the young woman's mental shock upon learning Victor may have lied to her about their future. That letter read, you've probably noticed the effect of mental shocks on different individuals. You've seen how some crumple up, how others yelp once and go mad, how a very few sat still. You have observed the crucial strokes, left the smallest dent on the surface. The shock went deeper than fainting or screaming. It got me and burned the soul out like an electric fuse, and there was nothing left but the body. The existence of a third letter, key to the Nelms mystery, was confirmed to be written by Beatrice Nelms. She mailed it to her brother Marshall in San Francisco on June 14th while she was in San Antonio, but she wrote the letter before she left Atlanta. Beatrice wrote of the planned trip to Texas to secure deeds to land, which Victor claimed to have purchased for Eloise. It was considered valuable evidence because it was Beatrice, in her own words, sharing the object of her journey and plans for she and Eloise to leave Atlanta for the sole purpose of meeting Victor Inez in Texas. On October 12, 1914, Victor and Ida Mae Inez were indicted for the murder of Eloise Nelms Dennis and Beatrice Nelms. The following day, they were released on bail of $4,500. The couple faced trial on November 15th, and their defense filed a habeas corpus. The prosecution could not present the bodies of Eloise and Beatrice. The defense argued, under Texas law, that meant the state could not bring the case without the bodies. Sadly, for the Nelms family, there may have been small fragments of human bones found at the Inez, Texas home, but there was no way to prove it was the remains of Eloise and Beatrice, and the state could present no witness who had seen the sisters' bodies. In the end, the jury was ordered to acquit Victor and Ida Mae Inez. But the couple would not be free long. There was not a murder conviction, but Georgia authorities had evidence of larceny by trust. An arrest warrant was issued for the couple for stealing money from Eloise and Beatrice with a promise of investments, which the couple never made. Victor and Ida Mae fought extradition to Georgia, but lost, and in the summer of 1915, they were extradited. In May 1916, they faced trial, with the state of Georgia displaying the meat grinder in the courtroom as a powerful visual for the jury. Mrs. Nelms took the stand to read some of the nearly 100 love letters written to Eloise from Victor Inez, letters that proved the two had been involved romantically, despite Victor's denial. Victor and Ida Mae were found guilty. Victor was sentenced to 7 years hard labor on the Georgia chain gang. Ida Mae was sentenced to 3 years in the state prison farm at Milledgeville. Ida Mae Inez was paroled after 2 years due to her physical challenges brought on by tuberculosis. But Ida Mae and Victor had new charges to deal with. Because they had used the mail to defraud the Nelms sisters, they were both indicted in U.S. District Court. Ida Mae was granted bond and allowed to return to her home in Oregon. When Victor was released from state prison in October 1922, federal authorities greeted him at the prison gate to arrest him for mail fraud. When the case went to trial in March 1923, Ida Mae was too ill to appear. Victor Inez was convicted and sentenced to 5 years at the Atlanta Federal Prison. Ida Mae Inez never stood trial in federal courts. Tuberculosis continued to take its toll, and in March 1933, an annual report on the status of the accused, Ida Mae Inez, revealed the 67-year-old was wasting away, just 88 pounds, stooped and shriveled in her room at a private sanatorium, constantly coughing. She may not have been convicted and sent to a federal prison, but some would argue Ida Mae remained in prison by a disease until her death was confirmed to authorities in October 1933. The death of Ida Mae Inez seemed to close the chapter on the mystery of the Nelms sisters, but it reminded the country that the end of one mystery led to the beginning of a new one. Victor Inez had completed his federal prison term in January 1927. but was not released because he was unable to pay the $1,000 fine associated with his sentence. On February 1st, Victor took a pauper's oath and agreed to serve 30 days to pay off the debt. But just days later, a mysterious man arrived at the prison, paid the $1,000 fine, and 66-year-old Victor Inez was freed. He was last seen getting into a car, which drove away, and took with it the mystery of what happened to Victor Inez. Just like Beatrice and Eloise Nelms, he disappeared and was never seen alive again. Southern Mysteries is created and hosted by me, Shannon Ballard. Lily Nelms and her son Marshall poured their heart and soul into solving the mystery of what happened to Eloise and Beatrice. Lily spent the majority of her inheritance to finance rewards and resources the family needed as they pursued a private investigation, which eventually led to arrest and some semblance of justice for the Nelms sisters. In March 1922, Atlanta papers shared the sad news that 61-year-old Lily Nelms died at home. It was believed the anxiety and stress of the disappearance of her daughters hastened her end. Marshall Nelms, who was just 23 years old when his sisters disappeared, was a rock for his mother through the ordeal. He went on to serve in World War I, then studied for ministry at Southern Baptist Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Marshall Nelms became Pastor Nelms and ministered to the Atlanta community for the rest of his life. He died in 1961 at the age of 69. Thanks for listening to Southern Mysteries. As always, you can find the sources for each episode in the full show notes at southernmysteries.com. If you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll drop a review or rate the show where you're listening to help spread the word. And make sure you tap on that follow button in your player so you never miss a new episode. Southern Mysteries exists because of the core support from patrons who love these stories and want to hear more. If that's you and you want to learn more about supporting the show on Patreon and accessing episodes that are only available to patrons, you can check that out at patreon.com/southernmysteries.